All right, welcome to the Friar Phil Show. I'm playing a little music from Depeche Mode for a good reason and a sad reason. On May 26th, 2 days after my birthday, two people in the music industry died on the same day. I'm going to tell you about one now, and at the end of the program, I'll tell you about another one. But it was Andy Fletcher who passed away suddenly, according to the reports. Andy Fletcher, who was known as Fletch, was the main keyboard player for Depeche Mode. So it was really shocking. He passed away at age 60. And, you know, that gets me thinking about my mortality. And because I just turned 59, I'll be 60 next year. And, you know, maybe my time's coming up too. And it's also sad because some of the music people that I grew up with in the 70s and the 80s and stuff, especially in the 80s when I was young, and we would go out to the clubs and stuff like that, these people are starting to die off as well or get really old, like Phil Collins as an example. All right, let's get with the program and the guest we have. I've got Borna, and you might know him as Hog. And on his YouTube channel called Hogwash, Watch, not Hogwash, Hogwatch, he says, the San Diego Padres, Los Angeles Chargers, and my UCLA Bruins consist of my pulse. My mom had to pull the remote away from me on a daily basis because I couldn't get enough sports. Diehard fan since the mid-2000s, my goal is to give my viewers a different perspective of each team's progress or lack thereof, and game-by-game reactions and analysis, dissecting the team after each game with a mixture of positive and negative comments. He also adds on here, my energizing personality provides for authentic and real-time reactions. He's been doing it since December 29th, 2016, and I agree with that. He's got a very energizing personality, and I invited him to come on the program today. Hey, Borna.
Thanks for having me, buddy. That's a funny one. I don't even remember writing that. It was years ago when I did so. So you gave me a little trip down memory lane hearing that intro about the channel. But thank you for having me on the show, man. I know you're doing a great thing on the podcast, so I'm happy to play a role here and talk some pods with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start off first telling folks that might not know what you do on YouTube, what you do there, how you got started with it, how you got to be a Padres fan, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure, yeah. You know, I was fortunate enough to be born and raised in sunny San Diego. You know, I reside in L.A. now due to my career, but a lot of people, you know, I meet around the country, they always say you're jealous of living in San Diego, and they ain't wrong, I'll tell you that. I feel like that's the best city in the country, and hopefully one day I can reside there. So, you know, grew up a big San Diego sports fan. Obviously, at the then San Diego Chargers and the San Diego Padres, you know, sports just was kind of my MO. It was always in my blood. And, it started out as an innocuous hobby. Then it kind of, you know, turned into a possible vocation, which is kind of, you know, what I do in my career now as well in sport. And, you know, it just became something that I loved. And I ain't kidding when I said my mom had to pull the remote away from me because it was all day, every day. And, you know, kind of how the YouTube gig started was, with this Padre team, I was, you know, with any sports team, I really, you know, if things didn't go well, I didn't know how to channel. I wouldn't know how to bottle my energy. I wouldn't know how to bottle my anger whenever my teams would lose. It would drive me crazy, mentally insane. I wouldn't know what to do with myself. So one day I literally just started to put a camera in front of myself and vent. And, you know, I knew nobody was watching me, but I put a little index card over how many people are watching me, which at the time was zero, to act as if a million people were watching me so I could have that mentality every day. And it kind of just kept going and kept going. And now, you know, got a little bit of an audience, and it's a pretty fun gig, man.
I can kind of relate to you, because when I started doing the Friar Phil thing, I was doing videos, and they were reaction videos, and it was the Angry Friar Phil, and I was doing this in conjunction with KLSD, the Fan, the Padres flagship station, and the Ben and Woods program in the morning. So I started off like that too, doing videos, because I could yell at whoever was at home and around me, but that wasn't satisfying. I still had stuff in my head, and I started doing the videos, and here we are.
Yes, sir, man. Here we are. It's crazy, man. The technology age, the digital media age, it's pretty incredible how it really provides me an outlet for a lot of people. You know, I kind of think of it as therapy sessions, you know, especially right now, man, with this Padre team. We're having too much therapy sessions right now.
Oh, tell me about it. You know, and I don't know, did you hear Bob's press conference after the game?
I did, yep.
He was talking about Darvish and how well he pitched and how he should have walked the batter instead of letting him go. And I just want to hear him say that we're going to have a good sit down. We're going to talk about what's going on and find out why the hell y'all can't hit when there's somebody on base, but you can hit when there's nobody on base. You know, what is going on? What are you doing? Are you trying to hit home runs all the time? Are you not seeing the ball real good? Do you have a problem? That's what I want to hear. I don't want to hear this bullshit and excuses, because I heard bullshit and excuses from fucking Andy Green, and I heard excuses from Tingler. And I don't want to hear excuses. I want to hear results. And I want results by the trade deadline. Something needs to be done. But I put you on the program so we could see what you think about it. So I'll shut up for a minute.
Yeah. You know, it's frustrating, man, because I feel like year in, year out, we talk about, you know, the San Diego Padres as a contender. We're in the window. We have Fernando Tatis Jr. Mm-hmm. But let's be real, everybody. Like, this offense, you know, it's disheartening. It's been frustrating. I mean, I'll tell you, since May 1st, so one calendar month from today ago, the Padres hitters have an 83 WRC plus. They have a slash line of 234, 300, 334. And they are tied for the least home runs in Major League Baseball. We knew going into this season that we were predicated on winning games based on great starting pitching and solid defense, and it would just take an average offense for this team to be, you know, a 95-game winner. But, buddy, this offense ain't average. This offense is historically awful right now. And how many more times as fans are we going to be pegging the blame on a hitting coach, right? We plagued it on Damian Easley last year for the lack of offense. Well, I'll tell you right now, Damian Easley is the hitting coach of the Arizona Diamondbacks, and they're hitting the cover out of the baseball right now. Maybe it's time to take a look into the internal developmental flaws of this organization. Why is whenever we trade away guys, they start raking elsewhere, like Ty France in Seattle, Luis Urias in Milwaukee, Manny Margot in Tampa Bay. But whenever we bring in guys, they start to not produce. Austin Nola, right? Mitch Moreland. It's quite an anomaly. So it's frustrating because everyone continues to say, let's get a bat, let's get a bat, let's get a bat. That's hitting 300. But I think the issue is deeper rooted than that. And I think it all goes back to the core pillar of A.J. Preller and his fundamentals and his developmental flaws. Yeah. So it's frustrating right now because how much longer can this starting pitching hold? And even if they do continue to hold, it's not like the offense is going to score two runs anyways. So listen, if I were to tell you 50 games in without Fernando Tatis Jr. that the San Diego Padres would be 30-20, I think we'd all be okay with that. But knowing how it's starting to happen and knowing how lucky they got early in the year winning those games and now starting to see those games not go their way, it's frustrating. And this offense, man, this is an awful offense. And it's, to be quite frank with you, there's not much optimism that it's going to get better.
Oh, absolutely not. And coming up, We're in Milwaukee, a first-place team that's doing well, with, like you just mentioned, Luis Urias doing a fabulous job with that team instead of with ours. And then after that, we play the Mets, who are a first-place team. Yeah, it seems to me these hitters can't hit good, solid pitching. When they get a pitcher that's mediocre, they can hit him. But anytime they face, you know, a Wainwright or anybody that's a good pitcher, they're fouling off balls. They're swinging at ball four. You know, they're popping up. You name it. Any variety of at bat situations we're getting from these people when they face a real good pitcher. And I don't know if you've seen that, you know, as well. You know, that's why I think in the late innings we score more runs, because different teams' bullpens aren't as fabulous as we think ours is, so they can hit those pitchers.
It's listen, I'll tell you right now, Phil, I'm starting to lose my mind, you know, because this ain't a Bob Melvin issue, okay? This is an AJ Preller issue. We have to remember this, okay? We have to go back to AJ Preller right now. As boring as it may be, we commend Peter Seidel. He has been probably the best owner, okay, in the history of this city and sport. I kid you not. He's been the only owner to be willing to open up his checkbook. He is bleeding cash for this baseball team. You saw him sitting in St. Louis yesterday, couldn't get that smile off his face. He loves the game of baseball, and he is gutting his liquidity to contribute to his baseball ecstasy. Now, the issue is how that liquidity, how that money has been allocated has been a problem. And that's where AJ Preller comes into play here. Think about the small ancillary contracts that really are hurting this team right now, which is why we cannot bolster our offense. Ha Sung Kim getting owed $7 million per year. The dude can't hit 95 and has a really late swing. Drew Pomeranz getting $8 million a year over four. The dude doesn't even play. Okay? Those are just a few. We can get into the Hosmer contract, but that's not really a big thing that pops out to me. Some others that pop out to me, okay? Mm-hmm. Guys like Robert Suarez. Those are guys that you don't need to pay those $7 million contracts. Those should be answers you should find internally. Another one, Nick Martinez. We have no business giving him a player-incentivized contract that gives him leverage in every single year of his deal. So it may be easy to give Preller gripe and hardship on the big mistakes like the Eric Hosmers, but to me, it's the small mistakes that have not allowed this team to bolster up this team offensively.
And it adds up.
And it adds up. I mean, it's $30, $40 million a year now with these small ancillary pieces in which are not really needed that should have been found internally. So now the issue is, can you convince Peter Seidler to not only go $5 million over the tax, but to go $30 million over the tax? Because going $30 million over the tax means that he needs to write a $55 million check at the end of the year. Wow. On top of the team's already payroll. And it's tough. That's a lot of money. I don't care, you know, if he's a billionaire. That's a ton of money. So I don't blame it on him. I blame it on Preller and how he chose to distribute these finances. And listen, Fernando Tatis Jr.'s return, Phil, it's going to be a big help, but it clearly isn't going to be enough with how this offense is performing right now.
No, it's not. It's just one person coming back, you know. And I tell you, the club is frustrating me as well. You know, I'm to the point where I want to bang my head against the wall. And you're absolutely right about the A.J. Preller thing. He's had 8 years now to produce something, you know. And we have, well, we're almost there, or you're going to be a contender. Yeah, you'll play in the wild card game against St. Louis again, and then you'll play the Dodgers again, and then you'll lose, you know. I'm sick of that every year. Very, very sick of it. So yeah, I do agree with you. This problem belongs on the desk of AJ Preller.
No doubt. Yeah, it's it is what it is, though, right, Phil? Because at this point, it's, you know, it's not like we can can him. I mean, we're way too deep into this process with him. You know, the whole system is his guys from top to bottom. You know, people talking about bringing Theo Epstein, whatever. But you know, if you're going to gut your president of baseball operations, it's, I don't care where you are in terms of a winning team, it's going to take at least three to five years. For the new person to replenish the system with his people, his personnel, his staff, his prospects. So, you know, we're way too deep into this process to can AJ Preller. We got Eric Hosmer at the back end of his prime, Manny Machado in the thick of his prime, Fernando Tatis Jr. entering his prime, right? Jake Cronenworth. You know, so it's just, you can't can Preller at this point. We just have to live with it. Unfortunately, I think that's the situation.
Yeah, it is, because you can't do it, and you're absolutely right. You know, it'll take a good 3 to 5 years for a new person to get everything in place and hopefully do a better job than Preller. So, you know, it'd be nice to get rid of him and start with somebody fresh, but it's not practical. A lot of people have a lot of suggestions during the games, especially when we're losing, you know, about what we should do about getting hitters or this or that. Do you get a lot of that in your videos that you do?
A lot of what?
A lot of suggestions, you know, wishful thinking.
I mean,
comments.
I mean, I think all the Padres community is going to have wishful thinking in terms of the people they want to acquire. I mean, we can segue this into potential acquisitions for the organization. I mean, listen, I think every year, regardless of, you know, if the team is in somewhat contention, which the Padres are, there's 15 to 20 names that are always circulating around the team, right? So I brought up Kyle Lewis from Seattle because that's an interesting one. I kind of started the JD Martinez trend. You kind of see all those articles, all everything. It's because I mentioned it one day and it kind of got rolling. The issue is Boston's probably going to start winning. So, you know, if Boston's selling at the deadline, JD Martinez is no doubt the no-brainer number one option for this team.
Well, yeah.
You can DH him. If you have to, you can put him in right. This guy's literally going to be the Triple Crown winner right now. I mean, it's unbelievable. And what's more even beautiful is that he's an expiring contract. He's a rental. So it's not going to cost as much prospect capital, whereas if you were going to trade for JD a year ago. Now, the biggest question related to this team, Phil, is it's not about getting JD. It's about what are the repercussions and the ramifications of acquiring someone like that. It is, we are going to blow through the CBT. Hmm. So when we talk about AJ Preller, when we talk about Peter Seidler, the question isn't that they want to improve this team. They clearly want to improve the team. But at what cost does that come to Peter Seidler? At this current day, the San Diego Padres are about $4 to $6 million over the CBT. JD Martinez is owed $19 million this year. Okay, so you're going to absolutely blow through the CBT. So acquiring someone like JD is actually really going to cost you about $30 million extra.
Wow.
Now, we weigh what they teach you in Economics 101. What's the opportunity cost to that? Is it worth it? And, you know, listen, every fan's going to be like, duh, but we're not the one wiring all this money to these players, right? That's what, like, I'm younger, but I try and tell some of my younger fans, too, like, the concept of money is still very important to an owner, right? So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, is this worth it for Seidler? You know, I think what's going to go into his decision-making process is, does he think acquiring someone like JD Martinez pushes the needle in conjunction with Tatis coming back, that these two guys will elevate us into a World Series team? If the answer is yes, he will do it. If it's no, he won't. But adding someone like JD Martinez and Fernando Tatis Jr., now we could be talking. Now we could be talking.
Yeah, that would be a nice pair to have in the field. And Manny Machado, if he keeps being hot. He's kind of lukewarm now. At least he was in St. Louis, but he got a couple of hits. But yeah,
he's three for his last 26, I believe Manny Machado is, or four for his last 26 now. And all of those four hits, unfortunately, none of them extra base hits.
Nope, singles. And it makes you wonder what's going on with him, too. You know, he's supposed to be the leading hitter, or at least he was in April. And now, you know, it's time to go into the May slump, the June gloom. You know, what the fuck is going on with them? You know?
Talk about the May slump for us.
And we got to watch that. And, you know, like for what I do and for what you do, I've got to watch this shit, you know, every day. You know, I love baseball. I grew up with baseball. First time I went to a baseball game was with my dad to see the New York Mets, because we lived in New York. And that was in 1969, during that fabulous season where they won the World Series, and I was 6 years old. After that, I was hooked on baseball and played Little League and everything else. So I love watching the game, and I don't mind watching the Padre games, but it just gets depressing after a while. You know, bases loaded. And what happens? We get Robinson Cano to come up, and he hits.
I thought he hit it out, Phil. I thought he did, too,
but then that bastard caught the fucking ball, and I wanted to just rip his hair out.
That would have been a great moment, man. It would have been a really great moment. It hopefully would have felt like one of those moments that were turning. But, Phil, I mentioned something, okay? And this is something that I mentioned to a lot of my viewers. And listen, I'll tell you, I've been getting some flack on Twitter recently. I'm sure you've seen it. And I'm totally okay with that, because I am not going to be one of those Twitter accounts that only just says positive things about this baseball game. I'm going to tell you how it is, and I'll go down with that. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that this Padre team right now, they're getting lucky with how they're winning baseball games. When they beat the Pittsburgh Pirates 4-3 in that first game of that three-game set, in which Voit took a three-run shot, and then Myers had the game-winning RBI in the eighth inning, I said, hey, Padres fans, great win, but this team has serious issues. My biggest concern is that this lack of offense, but still winning these baseball games, is going to mask A.J. Preller's view of how this team really is, and may just stay with the notion that all he needs is Fernando Tatis Jr. to come back to save the day.
So yeah, like the coming of Jesus, you know? This thing with Tatis, you know, here he comes, he's coming back. We're all blessed now, and we're going to get a bunch of the Slam Diego shit will start again. We'll get a bunch of grand slams.
Exactly. So I was actually happy when they lost to the Pirates the next night. I was happy. I wasn't happy that Taylor Rogers blew his first save of the year, but I was more so happy that this offense finally paid the price for losing to a mediocre team in the Pittsburgh Pirates. And the starting pitching did not get anything to show for it, even though Joe Musgrove was fantastic through six. So my biggest thing is, now we are really starting to see this offense get exposed, and now the starting pitching is not going to be able to hang on to it. Because right now the starting pitching is doing well, though. But what about when it's August, September, when some of these guys have over 150 innings pitched, and they're taxed, you know? If this offense remains the same, we're not even going to be talking about a World Series. We'll probably be sitting on our couches at the end of September, yet again, in San Diego.
Mm-hmm. Once again. And I'm tired of that. You know, even, oh, I don't know. Jesus. Sometimes I don't know what to say about these people. You just want to do something with them. You know, yell at them, you know, invite Manny over for cocktails and stuff, and have a good sit down with him. Something, you know, because I think a lot of these guys can hit, and they could be good offensively, but there's something mental that goes on with them, I think, with a lot of the hitters. I don't know. Do you find that with them, or?
I don't know, man. I think when teams are hitting well, it's contagious. I think when teams are slumping, it's contagious. You know, baseball's a contagious game. I think the really interesting thing about this offense is going to be, does this clubhouse stick together? Is this clubhouse stronger than it was last year when adversity is hit? Because we know last year when adversity came the Padres' way, it was a shitstorm. Excuse my French. And it didn't help when you had guys like Tommy Pham in that clubhouse. So we saw after some of those Pirates losses, I think after the Pirates loss, Eric Hosmer had a players-only meeting. But it seems like that hasn't worked. Robinson Cano also went into the batting cage with five Padres to have a meeting. That didn't work. Cano actually recently just got optioned by the Padres a few hours ago as he was 3-for-25 in his short sample size. 3-for-28 in his short sample size with the Padres. We can talk about that in a little bit. I'm not a fan of getting rid of him, actually. I'll get into why. But, you know, the team's trying things. They're trying players-only meetings. But at the end of the day, the players can do all they want, but they can't do enough if there's just that lack of personnel. Yeah. And I was the first one to say it on my streaming this year, don't expect Jake Cronenworth to have as good of a year as he did last year. And everybody blew me up for it. I'm like, guys, what do you expect? He was a four-war player last year. He had 20-plus home runs, 270. It ain't happening again with somebody who has a smaller sample size. They're going to have a book on him. They're going to know how to pitch him this year. And what do you see now? You see 210. He's on pace for 9 home runs. And I think he's going to be better than that. But I just kept saying it. The Padres have an infield surplus. Consider trading him in the winter when his value is at an all-time high to go ahead and get a Brian Reynolds, to go ahead and get a Cedric Mullins. Where do you stand on that boat? Because I got hammered for it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we got that surplus. We need to use the surplus, and Cronenworth would be a good trade, and we probably could get somebody decent that can hit the fucking ball, you know? So, when you were talking about that, I remember that program, because I watch you. I'm like a secret lurker that's there. I'm not really in the chat too much, but I watch, and I remember you talking about that, and I remember people losing their mind about it. The trade, Cronenworth? No, you can't do that. He's close to God. Because what if he did last year? And you're right, you know, he's not doing it this year, is he?
Yeah, you know, it's frustrating too, because I think especially, you know, I think my audience is a little younger, and I think what comes with age and frustration is that a lot of people get emotionally attached to players. And listen, I'm all for the young kid going to the ballpark, seeing his favorite player play. But it has to come to a point where if that favorite player isn't even playing well, you have to let go of your emotional attachment. My biggest concern with Cronenworth's success last year was that everybody became emotionally attached to Jake Cronenworth. And everybody became obsessed with Jake Cronenworth. And everybody assumed that this guy was the next Dustin Pedroia.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start to not see that, then you have people becoming defensive. People almost like defending somebody you know is in the wrong, right? That's kind of how we are now in our defense with Jake Cronenworth. But now you're starting to see everybody on Padres Twitter. Now you're starting to see everybody saying, I should have told you we should have traded him. For everyone saying that on Twitter right now, they were lying, okay? There was two or three of us back in December saying we should trade Jake Cronenworth, and I'll tell you, Phil, got absolutely hammered for it. But listen, it's the risks you take when making some claims like this. But my biggest point is that we are emotionally attached to our guys. Now, I don't want to be too extreme. I think Jake is going to turn it around. But my biggest point is that I don't think Jake is a 274 WAR player. He's more so probably a 235, 240, 15 home run guy at best and a 2.5 WAR player. He's on a minimum contract for the next 4 years. He still has great value. But does he have the value that he did, hey, 5 months ago? Hell to the nut.
Yeah, he sure doesn't. Not the way he's playing. Yep. You know, I like him defensively. He makes some really incredible plays. And in fact, he did one today. But you've got to have that ability to hit the ball fair, you know, and contribute to the offense. If that's not happening, then we have to think of other alternatives. And, you know, I can get attached to certain players too, you know. But that doesn't work for me. You know, if I stay attached to, like, say, Tatis and stuff, if he's getting lousy, you know, I've got to do like you said, you know, break away, let it go, and think about what's going to be good for the team. And basically, you know, this team, like any other team, works for us. We pay a lot of the salary, you know, through the concessions and tickets and other stuff, you know, that adds, you know, to some of the payroll. So, you know, it's almost like a business to me where I want the players to perform. And if not, you know, we need to do something. So trading Cronenworth, you know, if it's got to be done, it's got to be done. But, you know, you've got the people saying before, you know, I don't want to trade him. You're crazy. He's fabulous. You know, he's going to do wonderful. But then when he's not, yeah, they in the same voice, they say, well, we want to go to the World Series. But how are you going to do it if you keep falling in love with players and not considering options to make the team better? You know, this is the thing. I see it on Twitter all the time, too. You know, and I just want to scream at these people.
No doubt. No doubt. You're preaching to the choir to me, man.
I get good listenership, so we'll preach to those folks as well. What do you think about C.J. Abrams? Should they have left him here or sent somebody else down or what?
You know, in hindsight, they shouldn't have called him up. But I'd be lying to you if I said I didn't want him to be called up. I mean, he was just, CJ was just having way too good of a spring training to not get the chance at the big league club.
Yeah.
The issue is they hurt the kid because they didn't let him play every day. When he got called up to the big leagues, I was operating under the assumption that the kid was going to play every day.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't. And when you have inconsistent at-bats, it hurts you. Because especially when you're a young guy, what you try and do is help them, as a coach, build mental confidence. When you look at Mackenzie Gore, there's a reason he only went five innings his first start, and Bob is slowly progressing him higher to build off your performances. But it was hard when CJ would go 0-for-4. He wouldn't play for 2 days. He'd have to think about it and then come out again. They mentally tormented the kid, compounded with the fact that now they gave him some starts in the outfield of a position he's never seen before. The dude's worried about hitting the ball, and now he has to learn about playing a new position. They put too much on his plate. The kid played 70 games in the minor leagues and got called up to the big leagues. That is unheard of. That is Bryce Harper level kind of shit. Okay? The kid played 70 games. He gets called up because there's a dire need for the team offensively. Now, if they called him up, he should play every day, and he didn't. So what do I think about him? I think he's going to be a rock star in this game. I think two people are overreacting to his struggling production early on in his major league career. He's 21 years old. Breaking news, folks. Not everyone's Fernando Tatis Jr. Breaking news.
Yeah.
You know? So the kid's going to be fine. He just needs more at-bats, and he's going to continue to get more at-bats. He started off hot in El Paso. He started slumping a little bit. But then again, he's going back in the right direction, guy. I know on Monday he had two more hits in El Paso's win. He lifted his batting line in El Paso to 270, 337, 462 slash line. He has four homers and five steals and eight tries and is riding a six-game hitting streak to lift his batting average that would have sunk to 173 on May 22nd, but now a nice measly 270. So, you know, he's improving. He's going to be just fine. The question is, do they want to rush him back up if this team's really dying offensively? I mean, I'll tell you this. Why is Sergio Alcantara on this team? You know, makes no sense to me. I'd still rather have CJ over him. What are your thoughts on CJ?
I pretty much agree with you. I think they called him up and not letting him play every day kind of hurt him. And then sticking him in the outfield, you know, you're right. You know, he's trying to learn to hit the ball at the major league level. And then he's got to learn how to play another position that he's not used to. It wasn't fair to the kid. And you see, you know, he's playing every day now. And you see, you know, his average is up. He's doing fine. So he's a real nice kid. And I'm sure he'll be up with us sooner or later. But now is not the time. And again, you know, these kids aren't all Fernando Tatis Jr., like you said. They're not all Tatis. And we have to realize that. But I like the kid. I like how he played. And I'm really happy that he's excelling down there in AAA.
It's great to see, man. It's great to see.
Now, is there anybody down there in AAA that we could bring up? Because people are always talking about, well, how about the prospects we have down there? Can't we bring them up and do this and that? You know, is there anybody down there that could possibly help?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There's a ton of options, but, you know, so far the options we've called up haven't worked out. I know we called up Trace Thompson. The dude was almost hitting .380 in AAA, and then he couldn't hit 100 in San Diego. You know, they didn't give him a lot of at-bats, but sure, there's a lot of options. There's Brent Rooker, who we acquired in the Chris Paddock trade with the Minnesota Twins, who's, you know, he'll strike out a lot, but he'll hit a share fair of 450-plus foot bombs. You have another option in Nomar Mazara, who I think is going to be the next bud in A.J. Preller presses. Mazara's having a fantastic run this year with AAA El Paso. He has a prior connection with Texas and Preller. I think he's hitting .380, has, you know, over 1,000 OPS. I saw he wasn't in the lineup today for El Paso. So I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if Mazara was a Padre tomorrow because they just got rid of Cano. So that's kind of my next guy. Another big option that not a ton of people are talking about is Ester Ruiz. He was a 23-year-old prospect who's actually in Double-A right now, but it's just having an absolutely insane start for the San Diego Padres Double-A affiliate this year. I mean, Ruiz this year in 169 at-bats is hitting .343, 8 home runs, 36 RBIs, 33 stolen bases.
Wow.
Okay? In less than 40 games, which is unbelievable. One of the fastest people in all the minors. So that can be a potential option for the Padres to call up. 33 steals on top of contact and power. So he's a name, but I think right now they're going to go Mazara. But the issue is this. This problem of offense isn't going to be solved internally. It needs to be solved externally. The issue is it's June 1st. We don't have it's not time yet for the trade market. It's not going to be for another month.
So we have to work with what we have, I guess. And, yep. You know, hopefully Bob Melvin will have some kind of influence on these people and on A.J. Preller as well, you know, giving him the facts as he's seeing them. You know, this one's not going to improve, you know. He's going to have a lousy average, you know. Jesus, I tell you. Now, I was taking it. I had a nap this afternoon, so I missed the action with Cano. Could you tell us what happened with Cano?
So I mean, it's pretty simple what happened with Cano. I mean, the dude only had 28 at bats in San Diego, 3 hits to show for it. The Padres pulled the plug. It's as simple. Listen, it's not confirmed yet, but all reports are showing that the Padres are going to cut ties on Robinson Cano. He could be at the end. They're going to option him, and they're going to look for options elsewhere. You know, this seems like a little bit of a weird move, too, just because they just brought this guy on, and it wasn't just for baseball purposes. It was also, you know, to help in the clubhouse. But Cano is likely going to elect free agency. The Padres are going to request that they can Cano accept an optional assignment to AAA El Paso. John Heyman suggests that the 8-time All-Star would refuse to go to the minor leagues, as it is his right as a player with 5-plus years of MLB service time. So if San Diego follows through with removing Cano from the active roster, he'd have the right to elect free agency, which probably be the likeliest of outcomes, which would end his time in San Diego literally just after 11 games. Wow. There was growing chatter that Cano's time in the organization would be coming to a close. We signed him to a big league deal last month. It didn't work out. The Mets owe him a ton of money. Cano had started awfully with the Mets, hitting 195 through 12 games, through 33 plate appearances with the Padres. He's hitting just .094. It's ugly. And, you know, right now, it hasn't worked out for him. So I think it's time in San Diego's coming to an end.
Well, I'm not going to shed a tear over that. I mean, no offense to the guy, but he wasn't helping in any way with the offense or anything, as far as I can see. You know, if he was there to motivate the guys or be a veteran and help the younger ones, you know, where they're hitting, or anything with having to do with the game, you know, I don't see where that happened either. So I don't blame the Padres for getting rid of him, because at the beginning when they got him, I was like, why did you get him? You know,
you weren't a fan, huh?
Yeah. All right, we're coming to the end, because I go about 45 minutes or so, because people tend to tune out after 45 minutes. That's why, like in schools, the classes are only like 40 minutes, 45 minutes. So, appreciate you coming on and having a talk. We'll do this again throughout the season, especially if there's something really good to rant about. And I'll keep watching. Everybody, you find him on YouTube. Just look for Hog Watch. Hog Watch. Not Wash. Watch.
Appreciate you having me on, Phil. Keep doing your thing, man. And we're a community, man. Hopefully, you know, we're all starving fans of a winning team. So that's one thing we all have camaraderie with, community with, and a connection with. So it's going to be a... It's been an up and down ride in San Diego, mostly down.
Yeah.
Is there more room on the way up? Stay tuned, Padre fan.
We'll see what happens. Okay, good talking with you. And like I said at the beginning of the program, there were two people that died on May 26th, 2 days after my birthday. The one was Andrew Fletcher. From Depeche Mode, and the other was somebody that played in a group that I grew up with in the 1970s. The group is Yes, and unfortunately, at the age of 72, Alan White, their longtime drummer, passed away on May 26th as well. So, in honor of Alan and his drumming, I'm going to play a track called On the Silent Wings of Freedom. From 1978's Tormato album, and it really has his drumming showcased throughout that. And in fact, the drumming is coordinating with the bass player, Chris Squire, who we unfortunately lost back in 2014. So give it a listen, and thank you for listening to the program. Again, be sure to hit that support button on the page if you'd like to support the podcast. You have three choices. You have 99 cents, you have $4.99, or $9.99. So any help is appreciated. All right. I want you all to take care of yourselves, watch your backs, and keep your mind and your heart open. Oh, and Alan, if you see Chris up there, tell him I said hi. Thank you.
darkest night so bad.